I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a show where we try to cover the past couple of weeks worth of video game news so that you don't have to go and scavenge around the entirety of the internet to get everything. You can just listen to this show. Of course, if you want more, there are a number of excellent sources that you can go to, especially, for example, if you speak Italian, you can go to multiplayer.it, I hear is really good. Hey Umberto, how's it going?
I can confirm it's very, very good website. So if you can speak Italian, please go to multiplayer.it.
Yeah, and you would know because you work there. So
yes, exactly. I'm the PC editor, so yes, I know something about that website.
Yeah, you would know if it wasn't good, you'd know better than anyone. So excellent. We also have with us today James, who's coming from England. That's very distinguished. Please talk to us with your wonderful accent, please.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me on today. I'm really appreciate joining you guys to talk about some video games today.
Cool.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Wow, that's exactly how I hoped it would be. All right, cool. Very, very kind of you to join us as well, James. My understanding is that you're a little bit more into the indie scene.
Yes, yeah, that was primarily what I play and what I focus on, at least with my coverage. But I mean, I play everything, but
of
that's
course.
My big thing. Is
so you're
games, yeah.
You're one of those gaming hipsters who only likes like 8 and 16-bit games. Beyond that, there's...
I mean,
I'm teasing.
To a degree.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you were to say, hey, would you rather play Fez or would you rather play Call of Duty Black Ops, then I'd say Fez. But I think it depends on what you're asking me to play, you know?
Yeah, and I think most reasonable people would have the same answer as you do.
There. Definitely, so. Yeah.
All right, we're going to be talking about a number of things today. Obviously, a bunch of news, some more important than others. And then we'll go into the Nintendo Direct and what we took away from that Nintendo Direct last week, I think, or maybe even the week before. And then the Microsoft event about Windows 10 had a number of things about gaming, and we'll delve into that as well. I wanted to ask about your constant vacation and travels, rather, Umberto.
Yes, I spent the last 3 weeks traveling through Seoul in South Korea and Stockholm, Sweden, and some different places in Italy. So I have my bag always ready to go. Yes, tomorrow I'll go to Rome. So it's this kind of pretty busy but fun life.
So
awesome.
It's always for work, or I mean, for South Korea, it was your vacation, right? You went there to watch, you know, League of Legends matches, I suppose.
That was the idea, but in the meanwhile, I found something better. So no, I didn't went to any kind of live esport events, but that was the original idea. But at the end, I found something better. So.
Well, now you have to tell us what was better than video game events.
I don't want to discuss private matters. So.
Excellent. We'll let our imaginations run wild.
Exactly, yes.
All right, so news-wise, Nintendo said that the biggest month of sales for them, for the Wii U, was December. And I think it would be easy to gloss over that announcement, but it's actually a pretty important one when you think that the console was released in November 2012. So that's a two-year-old console who is still selling better than it was before. Now, some might argue that it was selling so little before that that's not really an achievement. I would not agree, because I've been, you know, saying and arguing for the past few weeks that the Wii U is turning into a really competitive choice for anyone for a console. Was that something that that struck you guys? The biggest month of sales for December? That's significant, right, for a two-year-old console.
I mean, we've always been saying that the Wii U is one of those consoles that is going to, or Nintendo products in general, rely on these specific franchises to get units sold. And we knew that once Mario Kart 8 and Super Smash Bros. Came out, the console was going to sell like wildfire. And I mean, this article by Polygon that we're reading shows that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I guess that's what it means. The games are here now. And obviously it's Nintendo games, but it's not something that's surprising for a Nintendo console. I guess the 3DS is an exception to that, but maybe even other consoles. But it's still not performing incredibly well, but it's performing well. And well enough that, you know, the Xbox One has not caught up to it yet in most markets, it seems, from what we're hearing. So yeah, go Nintendo, and we'll talk about Nintendo more later in the show when we get to the Nintendo Direct.
Yes, and I think that. I think that I expect in the Wii U life a lot of this little momentum, but maybe never a real long momentum, because it's so dependent by Nintendo games that it's not a surprise for me if they have maybe two or three good games in a quarter of a year, that quarter will be very good, and then maybe some other 6-7 months of low sales. But I think it's not a surprise for me.
I guess it's probably going to get back down in the next few months until Star Fox and Zelda, most importantly, comes out. There isn't a lot in between, although. Well,
for the 3DS, we have Majora's Mask and Splatoon coming. We have those two games coming soon, which will be boosting up the 3DS. Yeah. So I think as long as
Splatoon is Wii U.
Wii U. Yeah, it's Wii U.
Sorry.
It's Xenoblade Chronicles, which will come out for the 3DS and maybe Monster Hunter. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But the 3DS was never in a bad shape. Although I guess when it launched, it wasn't in such a great shape.
No.
It turned great after maybe a year or two, and now it's as omnipresent as the DS was. But it's an interesting company, Nintendo. I mean, we'll get into the Nintendo Direct later, as I said multiple times. But before we do that, I just want to say, I think the Wii U, I've played a lot of Super Mario 3D World and Mario Kart, and I used to play the Super Nintendo. I've loved Nintendo for a long time, but I'm not one of those crazy Nintendo aficionados who buys everything they put out. But I think I'm getting to the feeling that the Nintendo Wii U titles are the best that they have ever produced. They're always good. Nintendo never produces bad games, or almost never. But the Wii U titles, they're the best versions of that they've ever put out. Maybe it's because of the HD. Maybe, you know, it feels like the HD allows them to express an element of their art that we haven't seen before, because they're never on any other console. The 3DS screen is notoriously crappy, especially now that we see super high quality screens in every smartphone. So it's the first time that we're seeing Nintendo with such an excellent visual quality, and I think it plays. And the gameplay wise, I think the previous Mario titles, for example, Galaxy, were very showy. It was very much about how to create 3D things. It was very, the game design was jumping up and down and screaming, look at me, I'm innovative, and mm-hmm. and I'm doing the Mario voice. Look at me, look at me. And now it's just quality game design that is that doesn't, you know, portray itself for, it just gets away from, it gets out of the way and lets you enjoy the game.
Yeah. I mean, with the Wii, everything had to be gimmicky. It had to rely on the motion control and had to be very, you know, we're going to take control of that. Whereas the Wii U, they've gone back to a proper gamepad, and I think that might be why they're able to focus on game design more now. They can't mm-hmm. be like, oh, we have to add in crazy motion design and we have to make it look be active. We just have to be like, this is a game we're going to make. We know how to use a gamepad. Let's just make it.
Yeah. Do you have a Wii U, Umberto, or...?
Yes, absolutely, and I think you're right. I mean, right now Nintendo has to focus on the hardcore audience because the casual audience is pretty much lost. So mm-hmm. I think they have to create really good gaming experience for their hardcore audience, which is already out there. They only have to convince this audience to buy the Wii U. So yes, I think they have some very good games, and I think that in the future the next Zelda will be good and Mario will mm-hmm. be good too. And if you take some series which already came out on Wii U and of course came out on the Wii, yes, you are right. Super Smash Brothers is better than Super Smash on Wii, and Mario Kart the same. So yeah, it's a good console mm-hmm. with very good Nintendo games.
All right, now that that's settled, the difficult question of is the Wii U a good console? I think the answer is now yes, for sure. We can talk about the Xbox and the fact that it still hasn't overtaken. Is someone getting their teeth done? There's a weird sound of... I don't know where it comes from.
I don't know. Not
There's
me.
A drill or don't something very high-pitched. Either. High-pitched noise. All right, never mind. The Xbox, I was joking last episode that I was certain that the Xbox price, which came back up to $399 after the quote-unquote promotion of the holiday season, where it was at $349, I was joking that that promotion was probably not going to was probably going to come back fairly quickly. I was talking about Easter and then jokingly saying maybe February for Valentine's Day. Well, turns out even that was a little bit too pessimistic. The Xbox mm-hmm. One is back at $349, 12 days after the price returned to $399, and they're saying it's a new different promotion that it doesn't, you know, they don't know when it will stop. And so my prediction, I think it's a fairly obvious one, but it will never go back to $399. Now that's the price of the console and that's it. And the console, because it's having such a hard time getting the numbers that the PlayStation is getting, and it hasn't caught up to the Wii U yet. So, yeah, it's not going to go back up.
Right. I think it's just... Oh, I'm sorry, James.
Go ahead, Umberto.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's just so hard to go back to a different price point because your audience already know that eventually you will have that $349 again. So it's... I mean, it's really hard to get back to an higher price point.
Yeah,
it's the same philosophy as with a Steam sale, where you have people like, I've seen this game go down to $5 before, and now it's at $10. I'm going to wait until the summer. I'm going to wait until winter to buy the game. So they need to show that they need to take it down, or people aren't going to buy the console anymore.
Yeah, especially since there isn't a super compelling reason to get an Xbox One if it's the same price as the PS4. Arguably, you know, there isn't a super compelling reason to get a PS4 either, but the momentum is going with the PS4. Neither of them has... they have cool exclusives that some people might want, but they don't have a full-fledged system seller must-buys. So given the momentum with the PlayStation 4, Xbox had to do something to try and catch up, and the only possible answer was the price, the only leverage they had, and obviously they pulled that lever very quickly.
mm-hmm.
Did you expect it to come back down that quickly?
I mean, I didn't expect it to come down that quickly, but I did expect it to come down permanently, you know, because of what I said about it being that people weren't going to buy it if it had gone back up. It seems, I mean, it's the Xbox One without the Kinect will receive a $50 price drop, so they still have that higher up version to buy. But it seems silly that they would drop it down that much and not leave it there because of how people would feel. Yeah,
no one would be buying it, but...
No.
So I'm sure this next piece of news is has no importance for Umberto because he already has much better hardware. The NVIDIA GeForce GTX 960 is available, and, you know, through various manufacturers. Why am I talking about this card specifically? Usually, I don't think I would talk about all the cards released, but this one is a very specific, addresses a very specific market segment. It's a card that is around $200 or 200 euros if you live in Europe, or I don't know, 150 pounds or something like that in the UK?
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
And so that's the somewhat affordable graphics card with the most acceptable amount of graphical power. It's basically the sweet spot. And the amount of graphical power depending on the generation. That X60 series is sometimes better, sometimes not as good. We certainly have some viable alternatives at AMD's with the Radeon, depending on the number, some lines. But that's sort of a significant release because it's a new architecture that is a lot less power hungry in the sense of electrical power, meaning it doesn't need as much cooling, which in turn means it doesn't need to have fans making the sound of a jet flying off. So that GTX 960 is probably a very good card for a lot of people who don't want to spend as much as, you know, the price of a house in a graphics card. And still want a decent amount of power. I'm joking, Umberto, that you probably have a powerful...
You were right, because I have a 980, but...
of course.
This is you're right. I think it's a good card. I mean, of course, you can have pretty much the same thing from AMD, but if you want to take this one, it's good because it's basically cheap, and as you said, it's not too noisy, and especially I think it's good if you want just to play at 1080p. is a good card if you don't want something crazy like 4K or I don't know Oculus VR kind of hardware. It's good, and both NVIDIA and AMD are not pushing too much in terms of performances because they don't have to. New consoles are not so powerful that they need to chase new consoles. They are already at the point where medium level graphic cards are good enough to play 1080p games new games very well. So yeah, they're working on noise, they're working on heat, and I think that's very good for many, many people who want to maybe to buy a PC but are not super hardcore and they don't want to spend 2,000 euros on a new machine.
Yeah,
it looks like it'll be a good entry-level GPU. Like, if you're building your first computer and you want to say, hey, I'm going to use a smaller graphics card so I know what I'm getting into, it looks like that's the exact niche of this card.
Exactly, and it's not even too big, so you can put the card inside the PC and put the PC inside your living room. It's not too big, and it's a good option.
Well, that could be the market that they're going for here, is to for people to use this GTX 960 for make their Steam machines when they're coming out in the is it later this year, some point?
Yeah,
at some point, right?
Yeah,
maybe. But I mean, it's certainly a mid-range card that is, I think, the kind of people that would be interested in this card are the kind of people who aren't already don't already have a last generation graphics card. Anyone mm-hmm. who wants to upgrade and who hasn't already thought, I want this, pointing at a specific card, then it's probably a safe purchase. Maybe wait a couple of weeks so that the craziness of, you know, prices are a little bit inflated now because it just came out. But within 2-3 weeks, maybe a month, when it comes back to really around 200 euros or dollars, it's a good choice. So if you don't want to read too much or, you know, research your graphics card for hours, because it's a very complicated scene, as is anything with PCs you build, 960, probably a safe bet.
Mm-hmm.
Evo 2015. Dear listener, if you don't know what Evo is, you are missing out. Evo is the main fighting game tournament in the world. It started out a long time ago as a tiny gathering, as many of those events do, a tiny gathering of friends who wanted to play fighting games competitively. And this edition, the 2015 edition, is going to happen from July 17 to 19, and we have the lineup. Before we get into the lineup, though, I wanted to mention a little bit about esports in general. I'm not a big esports guy. As I was saying, I'm not a big sports guy either. But it's still an obviously very important aspect of gaming right now. Fighting games are a little bit of a special thing. It's not mm-hmm. as organized as RTSs or even MOBAs, which are the biggest thing right now. Umberto, I know you follow esports mm-hmm. very, very eagerly.
Yes, exactly. I like them, and I'm not good at pretty much any esport game, but I like to watch many esports, yes.
So first of all, the MOBA scene, it is very important. How does the fighting game scene play when compared to the other esports, and, you know, which one is more important? Can you tell us a few words about that very quickly?
I think the fighting game scene is pretty unique. Even if you just look at which kind of players you have, if you look at MOBA or RTS, it's pretty much Korea versus the rest of the world. In the fighting game scene, is very, very different, and it's as you said, it's pretty unique. And for example, in the last years, you have seen many pro players going from Warcraft 3 to Starcraft 2, from Starcraft 2 to League of Legends, and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. If you take fighting games, it's less common. It's every game is unique, and it has its own kind of audience, its own kind of players. So each game is really interesting. You should do an episode of the podcast only on the Evo, because it's really interesting. And if I can, I remember that there is a very famous website, shoryuken.com, which is also a big forum. You can find them a good and free guide to fighting games. I think it's Fighting Game Primer, and it's a good first read for someone who don't know the fighting game scene and how fighting games work.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, shoryuken.com, which everyone who has ever played a fighting mm-hmm. game knows the name
yeah.
of. Fighting game scene is really interesting. It's, as you were saying, it's very diverse, and it's not growing in the way that... it's not organizing in the same way. It comes from a more... it's hard to say exactly, but it's almost more... more of an anarchy than mm-hmm. the very organized and commercialized MOBA scene. You seem to agree, James.
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching the fantasy LCS for League of Legends over the last couple of weeks and participating like Fantasy League for it and stuff. And it's all mimicking proper sports. You know, it's all mimicking football or baseball, and it's all very legitimate. Whereas the Evo is very... it's very like, this is how we used to play games in our at home in our living rooms, and this is how we're going to do the tournaments now. It's very I don't want to say it's very hipster, but it's very...
Well, hippie could fit the description. It's like, we don't want your commercial interests, man. We're doing fighting games. We're just gamers.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
And I mean, cool.
Yeah. But I think the interesting part of this story of EVO 2015 is that we're going to have two Super Smash Brothers tournaments this year, whereas 2 years ago Nintendo were refusing to allow EVO Super Smash Brothers in EVO at all.
Yeah, which is an interesting look on the things that Nintendo has had to change in the past year.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So yeah, we're going to have two Smash Brothers games. We're going to have Tekken 7, which I'm personally very excited for, Mortal Kombat 10 or X, which I'm somewhat excited for, Persona 4 Arena, which is not a new game, but I wanted to mention it as well because it speaks to the popularity of Persona and the signs that Persona 5 might become a much bigger deal than Persona currently is, because it has this background, this groundwork of following, which might turn it into a really big game once the new version comes out. So Persona 4 Arena obviously is a fighting game based on the RPG that came out a few years ago and that made the glory days of the PlayStation Vita with Persona 4 the golden, which I've talked about on this show a few times. Also present will be Ultimate Street Fighter 4, of course. No Street Fighter 5 in sight, unfortunately. Although, it wouldn't be surprising if Capcom showed up with Street Fighter 5 as a test version at that show. That's one of the places that would make sense for it to be there. Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, which will also remind a lot of people of college nights spent answering the question of who is stronger, Hulk or I was going to say well,
I can't think of any Capcom characters.
Well, I was going to go with a Marvel character, but I was going to say the Thing, but I think it's not playable in Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom. Galactus. Let's go with Galactus. And Guilty Gear Xrd. So a latest episode in the Guilty Gear series, which interestingly is designed by the same people who do Persona 4 Arena, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway.
Yes, right.
Yeah. Fighting games. They're a really interesting scene. Sort of obscure, but it's worth looking into because you can see some pretty incredible things in those tournaments.
Which fighting game do you guys tend to move towards? Like, are you guys Mortal Kombat fans or Street Fighter or Tekken?
I play quite a lot of Street Fighter and Smash Brothers.
Okay.
I never got into Smash Bros. Brothers. I want to try the latest one, but it's the kind of game that if you don't have people to play with, it doesn't really make sense. And the game is so different. I mean, all of the other games you have, you know, two guys usually fighting one another, and once one of them loses all their life, then you won the match. In Smash Brothers, it's so confusing. And, you know, I was old enough that I wouldn't play Smash Brothers when I was in college on GameCube, so I never got into it. But maybe I want to try it. And honestly, the Mario Kart 8 online mode is really, really well done. So maybe it's worth trying in Smash Brothers as well.
I've heard good things about it. That's the reason I haven't picked up a Wii U, is you saying how it's all very local play. I don't. There's no one local to play stuff with, so I haven't picked one up.
So sad. But Tekken is probably between Tekken and Street Fighter. They're my two favorites. Mortal Kombat is okay, but there were so many infinite combos, or at least, you know, super high damage combos that were relatively easy to do, that I never quite got into it. I played it for sure, but it wasn't like I got. Because the thing about a fighting game, it's like an RTS or a MOBA, like you can get really good at it. And there's a competition aspect that is really motivating. And when you play with your friends, everyone knows about that. But if you don't, try it out. Quick news. Lizard Squad, the infamous Lizard Squad, as you know, they attacked through distributed denial service attacks the Xbox and PlayStation networks over the holidays. And it turned out that that was just a promotion stunt, or so they said, for their for sale denial distributed denial service attack service. That service was hacked a few days ago, and a lot of customer details were made public. The one thing I noted in all of that was that the entirety of the revenue for their service, and arguably for the entire operation that they had been doing, the entirety of the revenue turned out to be about $11,000.
Which isn't a lot.
Yeah. It's like, so you did all of this. I'm sure they did it partially for the lulz, but also you did all of this and got 10 grand out of it? Mm-hmm. And some of you are getting arrested and might go to prison. That doesn't sound like the smartest thing you could ever have done.
No. I mean, that's not enough money to pay. I mean, these guys are in between like 18 and 23.
Who were arrested, yes.
Yeah. And I mean, so I can kind of see not having your mind around how much a wage really is. But, I mean, $11,000 isn't enough to pay for a year of university. And they're all British students. That's not enough to pay for a year of university here.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm guessing they were expecting it. They were hoping it would make more.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it didn't. So,
It will not be enough for lawyers, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Especially since they're probably not going to be able to use that money since it was obtained through illegal means. Daily Motion, the very successful French video streaming company, is launching a live streaming gaming platform to compete with Twitch, according to VentureBeat. That's something.
That's a thing. Yeah, as I said pre-show, this is the first time I've heard of this at all.
Which makes me sad, because Dailymotion is a French
company. It's French.
I mean, I've used Dailymotion for videos, and I like the website, but I had no idea they were launching a live streaming service. It seems, I mean, I'm glad they are, because Twitch definitely needs that competition. But it's, I hadn't heard of it at all.
The thing is, Dailymotion has been going after, a little bit of history here. Dailymotion has been going after YouTube for a very, very long time, and they don't seem to be able to make a dent. However, they have been able, in this pursuit of YouTube, they made deals with a lot of gaming-related sites. And for a while, they tried to chase YouTube through incredibly high CPMs. So they would pay a lot more money than YouTube did for the ads being displayed on those streams. However, those were abused, with some of the partners displaying, you know, 1 pixel by 1 pixel player with no sound, so that it would quote-unquote play the ad. And of course, that would give them money, and Dailymotion was apparently, this is second or third hand report, but apparently would turn a blind eye to it, because it would raise their numbers, which in turn allowed them to appear bigger than they were, or, you know, to become bigger. Eventually that had to stop, but they noticed and they realized through YouTube and through those partnerships that the gaming segment of video streaming and video delivery was one of the most dynamic ones. And as we've heard a few times, one of the reasons is that producing video gaming content is very easy, very cheap, and very quick. So they can produce a lot of it. And obviously, with the very quick rise of Twitch, that was another segment, that the live streaming was another segment that they thought, I'm guessing, they could make a dent in. And not so much chase Twitch, but I think get away from chasing YouTube only. I think that's more of what they're doing than really chasing Twitch. Now, that being said, you're telling me that you had never heard of it, which is a shame, because it's beautifully designed. It's it works really well. Yeah, Daily Motion Games.
I'm reading the article that you put in the sources. It says that they're going to be launching with partners like Eclipse, Millennium, IGN, and GameSpot. So I'm wondering how it's going to affect like those, like how they produce their content. So is that, because that seems like the big thing is like IGN will be streaming stuff and GameSpot will be streaming stuff, which is CBS. And
yeah,
looks like it's going to have a very more like mainstream, or are they going for a mainstream journalism?
Well, it's very good that they managed to get partners like those. I suspect that those partners might work with Daily Motion Games, which is great. I'm guessing they're not going to stop working with Twitch, however. This is not an exclusive deal. And I mean, it's already a little bit late to get after Twitch, but it's not impossible. I think there's another service from Germany called Hitbox.
Yes, exactly.
Right. And Hitbox is also not super, super successful. It's there, but it's not anywhere near Twitch. Daily Motion has the weight of the Daily Motion service to begin with, and the partnerships, at least in France and some European countries. Mm-hmm. So maybe would you be prone to using Daily Motion, Umberto? I guess we don't care who's streaming it as long as we can see stuff, right?
Yeah, the thing is that we, of course, are on Twitch, and it's not perfect. Actually, it's far from perfect. But the problem is that it's so easy to have new viewers from Twitch because, of course, there are already many, many people watching streamings there. Mm-hmm. Which it's really hard to think about moving to another platform. But of course, it's As James said, I think that Twitch really needs a kind of competitor too, because it's
it's
not good. It's not good, and you can see that because Twitch is not perfect, but they are not so fast in kind of improving the structure, improving the website, because they don't need to. They don't have any kind of competitors, so it's, they can do whatever they want.
It's the same thing behind Steam needing a competitor or Facebook needing a competitor. There's no reason for them to do better because there isn't anything else there. They've got the monopoly. And so yes. I'm really hoping that Daily Motion does well with this because Twitch needs it.
Yeah, I agree completely. If nothing else, that could light a fire under Twitch's bottom. Talking about streaming, Valve's Steam broadcasting has started. So you can now stream only to your friends for now, but I'm guessing that might be extended in the future. And between that, Daily Motion Games, Twitch, Hitbox, PlayStation Now, I mean, streaming video is a thing now. It's everyone's doing it. That's kind of cool.
I've done it once, and it was accidental.
That is not good, actually.
No, it was a little bit... So I turned it on. I turned on broadcasting, and I said that I would like, you know, friends can come and see what I'm playing. And then I forgot about it. And it doesn't give you... I mean, it gives you a broadcast when it says someone's watching. But if you don't see that broadcast, you have no idea.
And it doesn't stay on. There's not, like, a light that turns on and that stays on when you're broadcasting.
No. No, it just says, like, let's say, like, Jerry is watching you play games. And so if you get up and go to the bathroom and miss it while you're playing and you come back. So it's a
toast that comes up and goes away. And yeah, okay.
Yeah. And then so I came back after I must have made a sandwich or something. And then someone tweeted me, was like, hey, you know, you're like broadcasting a game. And I had no idea.
So, but only your friends in your friend list can see it, right?
I think there's like four settings. You can set it for like invite only, friends list, and then public. And I think public means that anyone from the community tab in the game can join, in Steam can join.
I thought it wasn't open to the public yet. I might be mistaken.
Maybe
Do you know Umberto?
Yeah, I think it's as James said.
Oh, okay. So you can already broadcast to the public. That's pretty good. Okay.
You can go under community, and I don't remember the right path, but I think it's possible.
I think you go to the Dota 2 game page, and it has like all the broadcasting people there.
You're right. Available settings: broadcast is disabled. Friends can request to watch my game. Friends can watch my game without a request. anyone can watch my game. Public broadcast can be found in the Game Hub. That's, yeah, that's even bigger than I thought. So I guess I guess Dailymotion has even more competition, and so does Twitch.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, it's cool because it means you don't have to add any extra programs onto your streaming. So you're able to save those resources to actually running the game. And it has, so it has like inbuilt chat and inbuilt everything. So it's really streamlines the streaming process. It's really nice. I've done a little bit more since discovering how it went weird, but it's fun. It works really well.
Yeah, that's that. And on the server side, it must be a big undertaking for Valve if you already potentially need to stream to a lot of people. So,
yeah.
All right. The Elder Scrolls, which was one of the last big subscription-based MMOs, is now not going to be subscription-based anymore. So you still need to buy the box in order to play it. So it's not completely free to play. But starting in March, you won't need to pay a subscription anymore. The model is usually referred to as buy to play. And on June 9, it's coming out on PS4 and Xbox One. So that's it. No more, I guess, WildStar is still a subscription-based MMO, but I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop and for that one to become buy-to-play at least, maybe free-to-play. Yeah, is it the end for subscription-based MMOs and services in general?
Maybe. Yeah. Yes.
Obviously, WoW is still there, and it doesn't look like it's going anywhere, but apart from that...
I mean, I think... I don't know if it's fair to say that, because, I mean, what good MMOs have come out that are subscription recently? I mean, Elder Scrolls Online was really basic and bland. WildStar's not all that great. Final Fantasy 13. Is it 13? 14. 14 is MMO. Yeah. And that's supposed to be doing really well, and that's subscription-based. I think it's unfair to say it's the death of subscription-based MMOs, because there haven't been good subscription MMOs recently.
WoW's still doing
so well.
But, you know, the thing is, I was talking about this on The Instance with Scott Johnson a few days ago, and the thing that struck me was, if I come to you today and I tell you, hey, I'm going to offer you a game, one game, and I'm going to tell you, in order to play it, you have to play $12 a month every month. Today, it sounds kind of outrageous. When it didn't, you know, back 10 years ago when the game came out.
That's true. But, I mean, with... Take the example of... Okay, so say you pay... I'll look at it how I look at it. So I play WoW, and that is $15 a month. Is it 15? $15 a month to play on US servers. So in a year, that's, what, $120-ish? I can't do the math that quickly. That's a lot cheaper.
A little bit
than
more.
Buying... Yeah, that's still a lot cheaper than buying... 3 AAA games, isn't it?
I suppose, yeah.
I understand that it is odd to be said, hey, we're going to want you to buy a subscription. But, I mean, Elder Scrolls is still going to have a subscription. It's just going to be based on a subscription. And same with Guild Wars. You can still pay 15 a month, 10 a month to play the game if you want to. I mean, I could maybe see games being free to play subscription for more models, but I don't think subscriptions are going away totally.
Yeah, I guess that's an interesting way to look at it. For me, it was like, well, WoW is still here and we're going to pay for WoW because we're used to it. Or those who do are going to pay for it because they're used to it. But, okay, yeah, I guess it makes sense. It's not necessarily completely going away. Unless Umberto turns my opinion around again.
I don't know. I think there is not just one reason why these kind of MMOs are having... big problems in asking for money each month. There are many, many problems. The first one is, of course, World of Warcraft, because there are so many contents there. And I mean, I think there are many, many MMO players which want to try new games, but in the end, after 3-4 months, they want to go back where most of contents are, and that place is World of Warcraft. And of course, right now on PC, if you want to have one single game to play each day for many hours. There are not just MMOs, there are MOBAs, there are many different kind of experiences. And you can find so many free-to-plays, which are very good in terms of polishing and contents, it's hard to ask for money each month. And honestly, The Elder Scrolls Online wasn't probably the best MMO out there. So yeah, you want to play World of Warcraft, and even though you don't want to play that one, you have Final Fantasy XIV, which right now is really good MMO, honestly. It's very
maybe
good.
Maybe I should give it a try. I never played it because it was so bad when it first launched.
Exactly. But it's just a different game right now.
Hmm. All right. Is it really Japanese, like really Asian and grindy and all of that? Or
yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, a little bit. Yes, it is. I mean, but it's also really Japanese Final Fantasy. So, yeah.
Well, I guess I can't really complain because I'm playing Destiny a lot, and that's basically the definition of Destiny is grind. So, all right, a couple of extra news. Intel has detailed its initiative that intends, among other things, to double the number of women working in game development by 2025. And I guess a lot of you guys know that I'm very attached to the topic of gender equality in gaming and elsewhere. And I guess that's a good way of doing it. Intel had run in with advertising issues and the Gamergate movement a few months back, and instead of gesticulating a lot, they said, all right, let's put in a lot of money in a fund to help things change. And that's what they're doing. So cool. I think that's a pretty good thing.
Yeah. I just wish it was by 2020, not 2025.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Do it sooner.
Yeah, but it's a 300 million.
It is, yeah. It's
fund,
a lot.
So yeah, it's a lot of money, and it's a Herculean. Hercules could do that task, is what I mean.
Yes,
or could try.
Yeah.
VR, that's a thing. A lot of people are, you know, working towards doing stuff with VR, and at Sundance there was an interesting little gadget thing. So you would use an Oculus VR headset with a sort of, how can I describe it, a chair, a sort of weird chair where you would lay down. It's a vertical, a horizontal chair or contraption where you lay down with your arms and legs spread out, with your face facing the ground. You would wear the Oculus that would display images of flying, and you would feel like a bird because the Oculus is very immersive, as people tell me, but I don't actually know because I don't apparently have good enough 3D perception. So yeah, be a bird. That's something that I would be interested in trying out. With a bucket to puke into right after, but
I mean, this is basically like you take one of those funnels you fall into, one of those skydiving funnels, and you put a TV or you put an Oculus on, right? I mean, I knew that the Rift was going to do something like this eventually. I don't see why we need it.
Well, if we stop at that, then no, we no, probably absolutely. Don't. Yeah, no, I agree. All right, cool. Nintendo Direct. There were a number of announcements. Not all of them were stellar. Some of them were interesting. One thing that everybody noticed was the new Nintendo 3DS has a release date in Europe and the US, February 13 in EU and US. And the US will only be getting the XL version because, you know, America is an XL country. another thing that sort of irked the Americans was that they wouldn't get a charger with the box with the new 3DS.
Which is really weird.
It isn't. I think you don't get a charger with your 2DS today in Europe.
Yes, exactly. It's the same thing for
the
2DS, yes.
And the thing is, it's so 3D, the DS and the 3DS, I believe, even up to the DS, share the same charger. And it costs like, I don't know, $10, so you can buy it separately if you want to. But it does make sense when you think you probably already have a charger for that, or it's possible that you already have one. And yes, if you don't, you would need to buy an extra one. But I understand it's sort of weird, but I've read so much about this and heard so much about it of people whining that, oh, why do you do that? It's frustrating and you dig. No, it's fine. And the upside is that you're not creating more plastic crap to dump into a box because you don't need it because you already have one. So I
think that's true.
Okay.
But think about like if you have not the gamers who are in the know like ourselves, but you have little Timmy's grandmother goes to Walmart and says, "Hey, I'd like to buy him a new Nintendo 3DS. I'm going to buy him this 3DS, and I take him to him. He's got no charger. How's he going to play it?" I mean, I'd at least like to see them doing a bundle, but with the 3DS and a charger, because you're going to have kids getting their birthday presents and be like, "Oh, I can't use this because there's no charger."
Yeah, I agree. But then you go back and buy it. I understand it's not a great experience, but hopefully the person selling it to you has, you know, tells you, oh, by the way, are you sure they have a charger or not? Because
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, no, I understand there are some downsides. And yes, poor little Timmy is going to have to wait an extra day to charge his game, you know, his game. And that would have frustrated me if, you know, when I was a kid. But I think the upside of not creating more plastic chargers that we already have a metric gigaton of is kind of should be taken into account, right?
Definitely
they've
the
been
upsides.
Selling those with DSs and DSIs and 3DSs and 3DS XLs. Right. There are dozens, hundreds of millions of those machines out there.
Yeah, right? There's definite upsides to way more upsides to this than downsides.
Yeah.
I just felt like the downsides were needed to be said.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. It's completely fair. And Umberto, in protest, has left the call and because he does not like Nintendo. No, he's back.
Okay. I'm back. All right. I don't know what happened. Sorry.
We have various theories going around.
It's the best one is Italian internet. That's, I think, the best.
Probably, yeah. Umberto, are you going to buy a Majora's Mask 3DS special edition on February 13?
Nope, because I will buy the white new 3DS, so I want that one. I don't want any kind of... I don't like the special edition kind of color scheme, so I will buy just the white one with the Nintendo System pattern on the button, so...
Yes, the special edition.
I like
that's
that one.
Another weird thing that Nintendo have done. Because doesn't Majora's Mask have extra things on the new 3DS? Why is that not being re-released? Why is the Majora's Mask 3DS not a new 3DS? Why is it just a special edition old 3DS? Or am I wrong there?
Oh, no. Well, the game is coming out. There's a special edition of the console to commemorate the release of the game, just because people will buy it, so they want to make more money. But, you know, the game is a 3DS game, not a new 3DS game.
Yeah, no, but there's the 3DS, the new 3DS, right? That's been released
on the same day, yeah.
Yeah. Why is Majora's Mask 3DS not one of those consoles? Why is it an old 3DS?
Oh, it's not. I think it's a new
3DS. Oh, it's 3DS. Not?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that would be... that would be a surprising move. No, it is a new 3DS. However, okay. you do bring up an interesting point, which is the new 3DS... there are going to be very, 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 very few new 3DS specific games. Most of them are going to be 3DS games, including Majora's Mask and others that are coming out. I think one of the new 3DS exclusive games is going to be Xenoblade Chronicles
X.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Xenoblade Chronicles X, which is a remake of the Wii version, and that, you know, it works because the new 3DS, for those who don't remember, has a couple of extra shoulder buttons. It has another analog stick, so you can control the camera in some of the games. It has a better screen quality, and the camera tracks your head so that you don't see the parallax 3D effect when you move your head and you're looking at the screen. So a lot of the things are improved in that new version. So Umberto, you were saying you were going to buy a new 3DS. Do you have a 3DS currently?
I have, yes, right. And but I've played a little bit with the new 3DS, the Japanese version, and I like it. It's as you said, the new 3D effect I mean, not the new, the 3D effect is the same, but the new tracking camera works pretty well. And I like Monster Hunter, so the second stick is good. So yes, I like it. I'm a little bit concerned because, as you say, there are going to be a few exclusive games, but I think there are not going to be too many exclusive games because, of course, they sold some 50 million 3DS. So I think Nintendo don't want to split his player base too much. But I don't know. It's enough for me to have a few new games exclusives, and the new hardware looks just good and feel good. So I want it.
And it's better. It's better. It handles the existing games better as well. It loads faster. The CPU, the GPU is a little bit faster. So you will see some marginal improvement. But I'm curious. You know, I have a 3DS which I play occasionally. Some of the games I play relentlessly, but not anymore. I'm curious whether or not I would want a new 3DS when I already have a 3DS. I guess if the 3DS I can sell it for a good enough price, the new 3DS in euros is 150 or so on Amazon right now, which is not an enormous amount of money.
It's pretty cheap, actually.
That's about as much as I paid for my 3DS.
Yeah. So if you can sell your 3DS for half that price,
yeah,
maybe it could make sense.
And you can also use the Amiibo with the new 3DS, because with the old one, you need the kind of external hardware, which I don't know how it's made because it's not out yet. So it's, yes.
Yeah. I think James, go ahead.
The only thing stopping me from picking up the new 3DS is what I use my 3DS for, is that I use it for all the virtual console games. And so I don't want to have to go through the hassle of moving consoles. And also, I don't think I'll see much of an improvement between playing on my 3DS to the new 3DS.
That's like, true. You indie
Mega Man 2's
hipster.
Not going to play better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, and talking about Amiibos, a new salva of Amiibos on February 13. It's definitely the Nintendo Day, February 13. And we're going to see Mario Party 10 on March 20th with a new Amiibo party mode that has specific character boards and stuff like that. However, if you want to use an Amiibo to play with Mario Party, you have to delete them their data in Mario Party in Super Smash Bros. Which I... What?
Yeah, that's really Japanese kind of choices that you people outside Japan cannot understand.
I mean,
there is no reason why.
I mean, I understand why you need to, why you would have to, why it's storing data on the Super Smash Brothers. Or no, I understand why there's data there that's being stored. I don't understand why they're not storing it on the Wii U. Because I mean, the data they're storing is super cool.
Yeah. But I mean, or you do it, yeah, I don't know, or you work the system differently so that it can store all of the data.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, they should be storing it on the Wii U, not the actual Amiibo, although I guess the Amiibo is the actual computer, so...
Yeah, because the idea, I think, is that you can take your Amiibos and bring them to your friends and that kind of stuff, but there is no reason why you cannot store everything on the Wii U and just choose which kind of... data save you can put inside the Amiibo.
Yeah, make it like Dropbox, where you have your these five games that you're storing on your Wii U. You plug it in, you put your Mario Party 10 data on there, you go to your friend's house, and you swap it back when you're at your own house.
Yeah, that's true. Or you just put a little bit more storage in the NFC chip of the Amiibo, and you store for multiple games. At least, two or three, I don't know. I'm not asking for 15 games, but... Or, some people mentioned, well, in that case, no problem. You just buy another Amiibo for the other game. And I guess that works as well. And the Amiibos are super complicated. Like, which ones can you use in which game, in which mode? Some of them work, some of them don't. Some of them work in some modes. It's like, I guess I'm not into it. So I shouldn't, maybe the people who are just understand all of this perfectly.
I mean, I think they're super cool little things because, like, if you're playing with Super Smash Brothers, you can teach them to, like, you plug them in and they start off really low skilled. And as you play against them, they learn to fight you and eventually they get to be they eventually beat you, which is really cool. Like, oh, I'm training this guy to fight me, Karate Kid kind of stuff with a video game. But I don't think it, you know, they need to be better engineered than this. Mm. You shouldn't have. Come on, Nintendo.
Well, they're selling like hotcakes anyway.
So. Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Splatoon will be available in May. I'm curious about that game. It's Nintendo's take on an FPS, or TPS, I guess. And it's super non-violent, cuddly, fun. You have to paint your opponents, not even your opponents themselves, but their area with a little paint gun. I'm curious, if only because it's Nintendo doing a shooting game, and I want to see what happens there. So yeah,
I mean, it's very similar, in at least in spirit, to Super Smash, Super Mario Sunshine, in my opinion.
Mm.
Mm.
It's true, you had that similarly. Yeah. Yeah,
you had the water jet thing.
Yeah, and and the way it looks like you're shooting liquids looks exactly the way you fought in that game. So I'm interested to see like where the development from that split off, because I could honestly have seen them using this to make a Super Mario Sunshine sequel.
Mm.
I think it has the look is a little bit like the Saturday morning cartoons, the American ones, and I don't like it. But I've played the game in I think at E3 and at a Nintendo event, and it's pretty good. It's I think it may be a little bit like Smash Brothers. So if you want to play it casually, it's very easy to pick up, very very easy to pick up. But if you want to just put a little bit more attention on the gameplay and mechanics, it can also be pretty deep if you want. Yes, so it's a good kind of a Nintendo TPS,
which is this philosophy is the one they use for all their games, I suppose.
Mm, yes,
the, you know, Mario Kart is that way, Super Mario games are that way, so yeah. Cool. Last thing I wanted to mention, maybe you guys will have others, was an announcement that was very quick at the end. It was Bandai Namco announcing Project Treasure through the voice of Katsuhiro Harada, the guy behind who is heading the efforts for Tekken. And it's a four-player co-op game. It's probably going to be free to play, as they were saying. And we don't have a lot of details on that. But what struck me was that a third-party developer is apparently committing to an exclusive Nintendo Wii U game. And that's something that was almost given up on, given the bad experiences of previous third-party developers and the sales numbers of the Wii U. Now, if Namco Bandai is doing it, it's possible others might be doing it too. So they have a closer relationship with Nintendo because they're Japanese, all of that plays a lot. But still, that's exciting and it's significant, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard a lot about Bandai Namco's previous free-to-play game that they made for the eShop, which was apparently really bad. So
which one was that?
I think it was Soul Calibur.
Lost Souls. Right. Yeah.
But, I mean, if they could do better with this one, all power to them. I can't think of any, like, how are they going to manage free-to-play? Actually, no, I don't have a Wii, so I don't know. But free-to-play, so you download it from the eShop and then you play it online, right? So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's it.
But Namco is pushing pretty hard on free-to-plays because they have Soul Calibur, they have Tekken, Ace Combat, yeah. And they're also developing something I cannot say exciting, but at least pretty new. On PC, they are developing Rise of Incarnates, which is a strange project, because it's, do you know Gundam Versus? It's very popular in Japan. It's basically the same gameplay. Just with different setting and different characters, and only for PC and free to play. So it's and it will be released, I think, February the 4th. So it's pretty close. Yes.
Yeah. For those who don't know those Gundam games, they're very specific and they're huge success in Japanese arcades, but I'm not sure how well they would do in Europe. So you play a giant Gundam as a giant robot, a giant mech, which you control through different means, but basically you play in teams and you have to defeat the team, the opposing team. That's pretty, you know, expected, pretty classic until now. But the way they move, I think it's kind of slow and it's kind of unwieldy. And it's very confusing at first, so maybe people will get the hang of it, but I'm not sure it's very adapted to Western style of play. Mm-hmm. And Umberto, it kind of reminds me of Monster Hunter in a weird way, in the way it plays, the gameplay. And you just mentioned you love Monster Hunter, so
yeah.
I can see how you would be, you know, it would be appealing to you. But
I think it's pretty interesting because it's two versus two, which is good because you still have team play, but two versus two means that each member of the team is very, very important. So you feel the pressure. I like it, but it's true. It's not maybe the best kind of formula for the Western audience.
We'll see. And the other thing is the push for free to play, as you're saying. I mean, I've had a few discussions on Twitter with followers in the past few days, and the idea of free to play is very, very common on PC, a little bit less so on consoles, but it's still a massive industry trend. And the reason everyone's rushing to it is that, well, first of all, it works and it makes a lot of money for the developers. And second of all, it actually is if it's well managed, it can be a good thing for everyone because you get to play the game for free, right? So, and the advent of free-to-play on console, I think, is going to be a very big trend in the next couple of years. It might work, it might not. The console market is a little bit different and the audience is very different from the PC audience, but it could be, at least, I don't think, obviously, everything is going to become free-to-play. It isn't on PC either, but it could become a very sizable part of the market on consoles. And Bandai Namco is at the forefront of that. You're right. The problem is the games they're putting out are not great in the sense that they might be good games like Tekken, for example, but the way they play, they haven't figured out the exact business model yet, that the right balance. It feels restrictive at this point.
Yeah, they need to play it smart because if they always do the cheap version of Tekken, the cheap version of Soul Calibur, it will never work. They need something like League of Legends, a new game made from the ground up with the free-to-play model in mind, and that works. If you do cheap games, it doesn't work.
And four-player co-op game could be fun. I mean, personally, I love online gameplay when it's co-op. That's one of the reasons I love Destiny so much. You get to play with your friends against the computer, and that's a lot less frustrating than playing against another opponent. It might have less of a shelf life. You get bored of it a little bit more quickly, but that's an area that I think is underutilized by a lot of developers, a lot of companies. Anything else you noticed from the Nintendo Direct? Anything else you wanted to mention? Or
they also announced a new Fire Emblem game.
Yes, they did.
James perks up. This is a hipster game.
I'm a really big fan of Fire Emblem. Fire Emblem Awakening was one of my favorite games of 2013. And I am really excited for
maybe you can let the audience know, because I'm sure not everyone knows what Fire Emblem is. And it's actually a very big deal in some circles.
Yeah, so Fire Emblem is one of the leading turn-based strategy games in the world. It's really big Japanese. So it's Japanese RPG. You have 10 or 20 different characters in the game, and it's very... I mean, I'm trying to explain it without describing what a turn-based strategy is. So you have different... I mean, everyone knows what a turn-based strategy game is,
Yeah, let's
right?
assume at least that, yeah.
Okay, so essentially it's... You have... Imagine turn-based strategy combined with the JRPG. We have different classes and different weapons so you have your main character could be... I don't know how to say it. I want to say Final Fantasy Tactics, but
well,
not Final
ahead,
Fantasy
you know.
Tactics. Okay, so it's Final Fantasy Tactics, but with a world called Fire Emblem, which is like a medieval fantasy world where it's all magical and there's demons and zombies.
So JRPG, basically.
Yeah, it's a JRPG, but with turn-based stuff thrown in.
And I think one of the big elements was that there was a very hardcore mode, which was traditionally the hallmark of the series, where if you would, you know, you do your turn-based battles and you say, this guy goes here, this guy does that. And in the end, if one of them dies, then they stay dead.
Then they're gone. It's a really hardcore game.
Of course, in the latest version, there was a non-hardcore mode where you would... play the game without that permadeath, which, you know, everyone who had been liking the game before turned their nose up at those people, you know, saying basically, I liked it before it was cool or before it was easy. But yeah, it's still a fairly big deal, kind of in the way of Persona, I would say, that same kind of love. And yeah, so an if version, Fire Emblem, like a sort of side story or side parallel universe of the Fire Emblem from last year or 2 years ago.
One from 2 years ago was awesome because it took time travel and dealt with it in a really, really good way. Like it time travel that made sense. And it was awesome.
That's an interesting phrase.
If you haven't played it and you're looking for a 3DS game, then you should really play Fire Emblem. I think it's the best 3DS game out there, honestly.
Well, maybe. And there's a demo as well, so you can try it out, I think.
Yes.
I think. And it's coming out in summer in Japan, but no ETA for us lowly Westerners. time travel that makes sense. I like this title. All right, we're done with the Nintendo Direct. Nothing else?
I can't think of anything.
Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, which we mentioned already, available February 13th as well. They're going to be printing money with Puzzle and Dragon Z and a Mario version of that, which is coming out in May in Europe and US. Pokemon Shuffle, again, printing money. Mario vs. Donkey Kong is coming out on Wii U and 3DS with, if you buy one, you get both. There's a new animation channel, blah, blah, blah. Nothing super interesting. So let's move on to Windows 10 PC Master Race.
Yes!
So there was a big conference by Microsoft a few days ago, and they talked about a bunch of things for Windows 10, including what it means for gaming. One of the things it means is an Xbox app in Windows 10 with the ability to view your friends list, your activity feed, message through cross-platform with your Xbox One friends, including voice messaging, and to stream games from your Xbox One to any Windows 10-enabled PC or tablet. So obviously a laptop, a tablet, a 9-inch tablet. You could be sitting in your bed playing your Xbox game with a controller through the streaming technology. You still have to be on your home network, though, at this point. Might change, but... game DVR functions, so you can record any game, including Steam games. They sort of had a nod there to Valve and a sort of friendly gesture, which was probably meant to mend fences or to show that the fences were being mended. Because they had a little bit of a spat with Valve a couple of years ago. DirectX 12, which will perform better than the current version of DirectX and will be less power hungry, blah, blah, blah. That's all kind of cool news, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
Are you going to be playing your Xbox One in bed with a tablet?
No.
No.
I mean, no. The people that want to stream games from the Xbox One to a Windows PC are people that already play games on a Windows PC. Right? I mean, what exclusives are there that you'd want to stream from your 360?
Halo?
I guess, but that's not working right now.
Yeah.
I think being able to stream games, I mean, if it was Xbox One games, and you'd be playing with an Xbox One controller, obviously, because they're not going to make, or unless they make a mouse work.
No, it's going to be with a controller, for sure.
So, I mean, it seems like it's just a feature for the sake of having a feature, Ben.
All right, let me give you an example.
Okay.
You are a young person who doesn't know the terrible, horrible, life-changing issues of having a child. And I'm sure that a lot of parents who heard this were thinking, wow, this is like I can do with my Wii U, meaning I put my kids in front of the TV and I can go play my games in the next room or even in the same room.
That is a very, very convincing argument.
Isn't it? And the thing is, even you can even do that with the Xbox's TV functions on your TV and then play your game at the same time. So the Xbox would be running both on a laptop.
Okay. Yep. I'm sold. Yep. Fair enough.
So that's one aspect. Obviously, that's not going to be everyone. I think the one thing that I would be interested in hearing would be whether, you know, if at some point we can get the same functionality through the internet, meaning you don't need to, it doesn't only work at home, but you can play your personal Xbox from your parents' house, the hotel, or, well, hopefully the hotel doesn't have super crappy Wi-Fi, but, you know, that could be fun.
Does the Vita do that already with remote play?
Yeah, it does.
It does?
I believe
okay.
it does. Wait, am I saying something silly? I believe it does. No? Umberto
sure.
is...
I'm not sure.
Maybe it does. If it does, it's good. If it doesn't, then that's too bad. I guess maybe it doesn't. See, now I've said both things, so I can say that I was right, no matter what the angry comments say.
But I'd really like to be excited about all these new announcements, but I don't know. They didn't sold me anything right now.
Streaming from PC to Xbox One, as they said they're looking into, is something I'd be interested in.
Yeah, maybe, but the thing is that was a conference for Xbox One players, not for PC players.
Yes,
which I can understand because they make monies out from Xbox One. But still, I mean, I can get the point where you want to play Xbox One games on your monitor, but I don't know, that's just not interesting for PC players. It's only something for Xbox One players, and I don't know. I was expecting a little bit more, because they announced that Fable Legends will come out on the PC too, but, I mean, maybe it would be a good game, but I was expecting maybe Halo, the Master Chief Collection, because is I think the last Halo game which came out for PC was Halo 2, so it's maybe, I don't know, 8 years, 10 years, I don't know for sure. It's a lot of time for sure. So I don't know. They promise this kind of PC push, but I can't see it. So,
well, you know, DirectX 12 is kind of a big deal.
Oh yeah.
So to reiterate, it delivers better performance on the same hardware, meaning that your same graphics card and PC, once you install Windows 10, will perform better in games that use DirectX 10, of course, 12, of course. But it will perform better than it did under the previous version of Windows. And it also performs with less power consumption. So, you know, again, less noise and et cetera, et cetera. I think that's kind of cool. Right.
Yeah, that's really... Oh, sorry, James.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that the important thing is that they're making it exclusive to Windows 10, though.
Well,
yeah, even though if you can upgrade your Windows 7 or 8 or 8.1 version to the 10 for free, so it will not be so hard to have Windows 10. But the problem with DirectX is that everything is very exciting until they come out, and that happened many times. So yes, it's DirectX 12 are great on paper, but I really want to see how developers will work with them.
That's completely fair. I mean, Microsoft has said again, gaming is super important, and Windows 10 is incorporating gaming, and it's very important to us, blah blah blah. They've said it before. I kind of believe them this time, but I might also be the person who, you know, has been bitten many times and is still putting his hand out to be bitten again. I think gaming is important to them, and they understand that it's an essential part of a core portion of the PC community. So They'll also be bringing the Cortana assistant, virtual assistant, to Xbox as well. So it will be in Windows 10, in older versions of Windows 10, and it will be in the Xbox too. So that's kind of cool, I suppose.
I like Cortana. She works really well. Yeah.
Do you have a Windows phone?
My grandparents do.
Ah, okay. So you had the chance to test it.
I had the chance to fix it for them. Yeah. It's fun. I mean, I think it works better than Siri does. And it's cool because it's talking to a Halo character. It's the same voice actress as it is who plays Cortana in Halo. Mm. It's really geeky, silly little thing, but it's really fun.
Their demo on stage was pretty unbelievable. And I think the demo part was almost preset. They started with the actual commands, not the intro, it was a lot more understandable. But I mean, it looks cool. It looks interesting.
Yeah.
And then you were saying, Umberto, you wanted to see how things perform before you believe in them. How about that HoloLens glass thing?
It's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing because it's a super cool idea when you watch pre-recorded demo online, and then you think, okay, which kind of application I will use with those kind of strange glasses. I don't know. It's cool. Maybe it will be some other piece of hardware which will not have good applications. I don't know. It really depends because you need to sell so many of them before many software companies will take them into account to develop something huge. That it's really hard to predict, I think.
I mean, I could see it being used for things like medical work and like if you have to do an operation, like holo projecting stuff onto that. But I feel, I mean, and with things like Skype and architecture, but I don't really see games using it. Mm. I mean, you have the AR stuff that the 3DS does, and that's a thing, but no one uses it that I can think of. Yeah. And I feel like this would be the same kind of thing.
Arguably, the form makes the function in this case, and on the 3DS it's very poor. The form is relatively unwieldy, but...
That's true.
But so just to catch up people who haven't exactly understood what it is, except like a big helmet of some kind, they promised holograms, which it isn't, or not by a strict definition. What it does is a technology and hardware that puts a sort of ski mask in front of your eyes and on the big screen in front of your eyes, the big glasses that are not like glasses, but like almost like a helmet, a bike helmet, where you put down the guard, the view guard. I don't know if the visor, maybe. Visor. There you go. There's basically a film, a screen that's on a thin layer of the visor. And so when you look through them, you're still looking at your environment, at your room, but it can overlay digitized or not synthesized images. So basically computer graphics. So it sort of adds a layer of virtuality and virtual images onto your existing environment. And that's what it's supposed to do. Obviously, you're the only person seeing them, unlike the fantasy that they sort of promised us in the first 10 seconds of a like Iron Man-like hologram manipulation in the air, which is what I was expecting when they said holograms. And obviously, I was disappointed. But still, there were a couple of compelling use cases, like when you're fixing your pipe, the person helping you can see what you're seeing exactly, and then can draw on the image that you then see. You see the drawing on your screen, which is layered between you and the real world. So you would see on the pipe which pipe to turn in which direction, because you see that image through your visor with the superimposition of the graphics and the reality behind it. And then they had demos with a kind of Minecraft game that was playing out on your actual table, etc. I think there were as you guys, I'm sort of skeptical in many ways. The first one is this has to be incredibly stable.
Yes.
So when you move your head, it can't jitter. If it moves just a little bit, just, you know, half a centimeter, the image that's supposed to be on your table, if it kind of floats a little bit, then it doesn't work. If it's super stable, then yes. Okay, maybe. Then they showed you, you know, projecting a screen like a movie on a wall instead of, you know, having to watch a TV. But you know what? We have TVs. We don't need to wear a, like, bike helmet in order to watch TV. But for then, gaming, if they don't use the environment, then it's more akin to virtual reality, which Oculus is already doing. And if they do use the environment, I don't know exactly how it would work. How, you know, how would it be fun? Maybe they will find ways. And the controls are also very problematic. Like you could do an air tap to control it. You can control it by voice or by gaze, is what they said. And, you know, voice isn't there yet. It can't work 80% of the time. It has to work 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. There's the hardware is also a problem because it works, and a lot of journalists used it and were very impressed, but it's you know, a lot more massive than the glasses that they are promising us for the future. It had, you know, a battery that was attached to your neck, you know, that was hanging off your neck with a computing unit. And the it's supposed to be a completely independent computer, which has battery life and connectivity. So it's not connected to a PC. It's completely independent. I guess to sum up my view, I look at it as maybe something becoming something in the future, in the same way that we looked at the Microsoft Surface, the original one. I don't know if you guys remember this, but it was a table that was using multi-touch to do various things. So it was a large table, and it was presented a couple of years, maybe even more, before the iPhone. But it was almost a technology showcase. It was like, this is possible. But the use only came when, you know, Apple found a use for that multi-touch technology, which, by the way, existed before the Surface as well. It was demonstrated academically before that. And it only came when there was a use for it. It feels like we're at that point with that mask hologram thing, Windows holographic.
Yes.
And maybe in 5-10 years there will be a use for it, but it doesn't look like this is going to be it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I could see it having like military applications or medical applications, but nothing we're going to have use for at all. Mm. At least not for the price point they're going to be selling this at, which I can imagine is going to be very high.
Yeah, they want to sell it. They want to start selling it during the life cycle of Windows 10, so maybe in a couple of years. They don't want to sell it before it works perfectly, which is to their credit. I mean, the display portion, the field of view is very limited also on the prototypes they have now. It was like having a screen in front of your eyes and looking through a window, kind of, not covering your entire field of view. So I'm sure it will get better. I'm curious about applications. I guess what Umberto said 10 minutes ago. So we will see. I'm surprised, though. I was sure, you know, through the geek explosion on Twitter and elsewhere, I was guessing that you guys would be super ecstatic about that thing as well, and I would have to bring you down. But now I'm almost feeling like I have to be more enthusiastic about it to balance it.
If they were to give me something like, if they were to say, hey, I have something you can do this right now, like, this will work in Elite Dangerousness to do this right now, I'd be excited about it. But they haven't presented anything that I care about at the minute enough for me to care about it, you know? Yeah.
You're not a dreamer. Developers will find stuff.
Yes. yes.
Maybe. I'm still cautious, let's say.
Yeah.
All right. I think that brings us to the end. To the end of our discussion. Unless you want to mention, Umberto, the Heroes of the Storm founder pack. I know you love
Yes, why not? I was looking at your...
language article?
Yeah, exactly. so €35, which sounds, I think, pretty expensive, but if you know how much each character costs, usually it's not so expensive. The problem is that Heroes of the Storm, it's pretty expensive, and I don't know, €35 for the beta key with three characters, some skins and mount skin. I don't know. I think it's a very good game. That's what I think. I really like Heroes of the Storm. I'm playing it quite a lot, and it's a game that probably if you like MOBAs, you will want to play, and if you don't like MOBAs, probably is still the right MOBA to play, because it's easier to get in, and it's very, very well executed, as pretty much any Blizzard game. So I'm not sure about that €35 kind of bundle for the beta key.
Well, yeah. Oh, go ahead, James.
I feel like I don't like it, because it's the same thing as like if you're paying for access, early access to a game on Steam. Like if you pay early access for something like
and a you don't like long game, early it. Access.
No, I like early access. I don't like having to buy my way into free to play games for early access, because I think that it. So I've been waiting. I mean, I have my beta key for Heroes of the Storm, and it shows that they're valuing it differently now. Does that make sense? Because one person's beta key was free, another person has to pay £35. And it shows that they're already creating or €35. So they're already creating a dichotomy between the players of the game. And
yeah, I mean. So first of all, very important disclosure, I used to be an employee of Blizzard Entertainment, mm-hmm. which develops this game, Heroes of mm-hmm. the Storm. That being said, they're not stopping the Vita key giveaways. So it's not like that's the only way you can get a key anymore. It's a free-to-play game, and a lot of people have gotten their keys at this point. It's entered closed beta, so closed beta is always closed. And you know that if you don't want to pay, then you can wait a little bit longer, maybe a few months, a year, I don't know, and you'll get in for free. So it's really an option if you want to. You don't have to, but if you want to, you can pay, and not just pay for nothing. You're going to get some of the things you might have bought anyway down the line, and a little bit of in-game currency, a mount skin, etc., etc. I understand why it makes people feel a little bit uncomfortable, but I don't think it goes into the category of unfair. It doesn't strike me as they're you know, squeezing us for more money. It's more like, well, you know, it's a closed beta, but if you do really want to get in and you don't want to wait to receive an invitation, you can also do that if you want to.
And I think I agree. I think me saying it unfair was a little bit of me jumping the gun there a little bit. Mm. I think that I like the idea that they're allowing you to buy into the game. And I mean, it's obvious. I mean, it makes sense they're doing that because people will be selling keys anyway to get in.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that they're selling it, but I feel like I would have... I mean, do they have a pack in the game itself to buy all these characters as a bonus? I feel like that would be what I preferred. Actually, no. Because then that's saying that I'd rather people didn't get into the pack. I don't know.
Well, yeah, the thing is, if you in order to get... Yes, they do have packs in the game, but in order to access them, you have to have a beta key. So it's not like, you know, but...
I think my biggest issue is I don't know if I want Blizzard to get into the early access style of game development. I think that's the best way I can formulate what I'm trying to say. Yeah. I don't want them to say like, oh, you can pay $40 now and get into the StarCraft Legacy of the Void beta early.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a fair concern. In the case of Heroes of the Storm, it's definitely a free-to-play game, so it's a little bit of a different business model anyway. But
true.
I think it's a fair comment anyway. All right. So if you want to play Heroes of the Storm, if you've always wanted to play it, now you can give Blizzard your money in order to do so. So lucky you. Or, you know, wait a little bit longer and play it for free. You know, that's always a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do think that the three heroes they're selling are good.
Yeah.
Are nice heroes, and the three skins is nice, and the gold is good. I mean, it's a good value bundle for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I personally, I personally, the way I look at it is that I don't think I've ever spent money on a free-to-play game, ever. I don't play them a lot, so it's, you know, it means something. Well, yeah, I have actually. I have spent money on Hero Academy on the iPad, which was a great strategy game.
It was cool. Yeah, it's an awesome game.
But I mean, yeah, here it feels like in Hearthstone, I've spent, I think, a couple of bucks when you needed to do that in order to get that unique card back in the beta. But that was it. I never spent any more money on Hearthstone, and I very, very rarely pay for free-to-play games. So I look at this and think, well, I don't really want to. So I'm already in the beta for Heroes of the Storm. So it's kind of, but I never pay for early access. I never pay for those things. So I'm like, I really do have a choice. It's an option. And if Blizzard or any company starts mishandling these kinds of options, then it's very fair to call them out for it. And in this case, I mean, I'm not diminishing the comments you're both doing on this operation.
Sure.
I think it's the concerns you're raising are, or the comments you're doing are, perfectly reasonable. But yeah, that's my view on it. All right. I think that's a meaty show. That's a healthy show. We can bring it to a close and be proud of ourselves. So before we conclude, though, I obviously want to give you guys an opportunity to tell us where we can find you on the internet. Please go, Umberto.
Multiplayer.it and on Twitter. This time I will say the right kind of Twitter name. It's u_Moioli, M-O-I-O-L-I. And yes, that's pretty much it. Multiplayer and Twitter.
u_Moioli.
Yes,
Moioli.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Exactly.
So, multiplayer.it, by the way, I think has been voted by the Committee for Good Video Gaming in Italian of the World for best video gaming website in Italian in the world. I think that's an official award.
Yes, just exactly. The Italian government and the and the European awesome. Union both say that. So, yes.
Excellent.
It's official.
James, what about you?
I am at Iagovos on Twitter, Iyagovos, and I run the indielove.com, which is one of the, it's a not very big indie games website, but we try and get content out that talks about everything in indie games, and then also initiativecheck.com, which is my own personal thing.
Industry check?
Initiative check,
right.
Yeah.
Can you spell out your Twitter name again?
Iyagovos.
That is a handful. that's your last name? No, it's not. It's Barton.
No, that is James in Greek.
James. Oh, and since you're Greek, it makes sense.
Yep.
That is excellent. All
it's
right.
Imaginative.
So, last minute news. Someone bought the special edition PlayStation 4. The number 00001 for, do you guys know how much?
Yes. I just saw the story, so.
$150,000.
That is a lot of money.
$130,000. It's just a PlayStation 4.
But and with no games in bundle.
We what, sorry?
With no games in bundle. No, so
yeah, I mean, they could have thrown in like you know, The Last of Us Remastered.
Exactly.
I mean, come on. That's cheap, Sony Japan.
So
all right.
Much money.
That's going to be it for us. We will be back, of course, in 2 weeks. In the meantime, if you want to leave a few comments on the website, you can do so at frenchspin.com. You will find there another podcast, which I also produce, called The Phileas Club. And I encourage you to listen to this episode, to the latest episode specifically. It's one called Are We Charlie? Where we get people from different countries in the world, including, you know, the US, Australia, Germany, France, of course, and UAE. A guy from Dubai joined us. And we discuss the events of Charlie Hebdo and the terrorist attacks and how we all received them and how the media treated them and what it means for our different cultures. And I think it was a really interesting episode. So I encourage you, it's a little bit, you know, it's not as fun as a video game show, but I think it's really important as well. So I encourage you to go and give it a listen. I hope you will enjoy it. So apart from that, the comments are available for this episode as well at frenchspin.com again. And I am at Twitter on twitter.com/notpatrick. That's easy to remember. It's my name and not before it. And we will be back in a couple of weeks with another episode. Thank you so much for listening and talk to you then. Bye. Ciao.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.